Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, and I have a very, very special guest today. But before I introduce her, I'm going to just remind you about my new book, Your Bullshit is Your Blessing, which talks about how to stop fixing yourself and start having fun. I have been fixing myself my whole life, and this returns me to fun. So you can get it on Amazon. It's a great read. And also, grabbing these, Real Talk. This one, How to Say the Things You've Never Said So You Can Have the Things You've Always Wanted. It's a very short read, very small, and it'll get you free by starting to say the things you're afraid to say. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Annette, we'll see what comes out. But anyway, I want to introduce my friend, the renowned Annette Nathan. She is a proud mother of three gorgeous sons. She lives in Princeton, New Jersey. She's been in, I think it's training and development for 45 years. Is that the T&D? And then, Yeah, okay. And she's all about empowering women entrepreneurs worldwide. And she's done business consulting for businesses for 30 years and literally worked all over the world. So welcome, Annette. I'm so happy to have you here.
Well, Hillary, I am just honored. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to share myself, but also to partner with you in a dialogue that I'm sure will be, you know, worthwhile. That's my intention.
Great, 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 great. So what we do here on this show is we talk about things that people maybe don't want to talk about. I know you have some stories you might have already, you know, told them many times, but I know who you are, and you're just a hero, like in the transformational world. You know, the work that you've done for all these years, and you're still standing. And then, you know, we'll talk about what happened, I don't know how many years ago, and here you are still making a difference and still, you know, just out to alter the world. So thank you for who you are. And, you know, now I think we're going to have, I know you said you grew up in Michigan, and then how did you get, you know, you were in India without sandals. How did you get from growing up in Michigan to that exciting world traveling person?
Oh, wow. Well, I've always been kind of curious about, you know, places that I'd never been to. And one of the things was that after I graduated from college, I was like, I want to get into the, you know, experiment, see what else was out in the world. And that's when I partnered with my cousin and we traveled to Europe together. And then
Can I go back a sec? Where did you go to school and what did you study? What was your...
I went to college at Duke University and I studied Asian history, China,
okay,
which I was passionate about.
All right. And so that's part of your world. You were always interested in the world, right? Wow. Okay. How did you pick that? I'm just curious.
What, history in China?
Yeah.
Well, history... I was, you know, I could write a little bit, but China I was interested in because my papa, who I loved and adored, was in the military. He says he was a spy. I'm not sure. In China.
Is this your father or your grandfather?
This is my dad.
Your dad.
So okay. He spoke very highly of China. And so that was one of the reasons I decided to, I got to check it out. But, there are other parts of the world that were fascinating to me also. And that's, when I, after spending some time in Europe, I thought, well, what else is there? And
So
so,
did you just take off with your cousin for like a year or something?
yeah,
Yes.
we weren't originally going to go for a year. It was like, 3 month visit. But then we decided to go to Egypt, and that was when life started getting interesting because it was a third world country I'd never been to. And it was a dynamic where it was a game changer. I learned things about the culture of a Muslim country and the Arab world that I had never, ever been exposed to and experienced. So that was great. And then after, and I can tell you stories about being in Egypt, but after being in Egypt, I went to Israel and worked on a kibbutz. And then I met a man who I fell in love with. And he talked me into, I'm going to say he talked me into, not really, but he's the one who said, do you want to go travel? He was Dutch. He said, do you want to, go to different parts of the world? I said, yes. And he said, let's go to Turkey and Greece and then India. And, it was during that time period where, the hostage situation had occurred. And so we were going to take a bus, from Turkey to Afghanistan and then India. And then we decided not to do that. That was during the Carter administration. But that's how we got to, we got in excited about going to India and exploring that part of the world. And I love, love, love being in India. It was really amazing, shock into
All
my
right.
system. So.
Yeah. All right. Before you do that, tell them you were just going along, being a college graduate in Europe. Then you go to Egypt. Tell them what happened there. Isn't that when that happened? That one
Yeah,
incident?
that incident. Well, so
Yeah.
again, I was in my early 20s and I thought, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I just thought, wherever you go, it's like being in America. Not. And, it was, we met people in Cairo and then Luxor, which was amazing. And then we went to Aswan to see the Aswan Dam. And both she and I, my cousin, we were naive. We just figured, we're just tourists. Well, we wore shorts, which is what you don't do in that part of the world. As a woman, you're a little more covered. And so one of the things that happened,
Were you the only girls like in shorts? Everyone else was wearing big long things?
yeah, galabeas. Yeah. The
Yeah.
truth is, I wasn't really, there weren't a lot of Westerners around.
Okay.
So it was she and I, my cousin and me. And then we were just exploring and looking at different monuments, that kind of thing. And then we were approached by three young Egyptian men who then decided they wanted to talk to me. And they didn't just want to talk, they wanted to get to know me intimately. And I,
Against your will.
against my will, and I was like, no freaking way. And I grabbed one by the throat, and the other two then got concerned. And then the three of them came after me. And thank God for my cousin, who I don't know where she learned this, but she let out a body snatcher scream and scared the living bejesus out of them. And they ran away, which was a good thing because this was, where your heart, I thought, I'm gonna die. I am gonna die. And she really protected me. And then when we were walking back towards the train, we saw them again and they were laughing. They thought it was funny. For them, it was a joke. For us, we were petrified. For them, it was all just a game. So That was an interesting experience. It was one of those moments of those transformation moments of truth, which is maybe I should read up on what the culture of the company is or country before, doing some looking around. So that was
that, the experience. Yeah, that like if that had happened to me, I think I would have gone home. Or decided the world is too, I would have made some decisions that probably ended my enjoying travel. So what did you decide after that? Like, what did you just say, I better learn more? Or like, did you make any decisions about the world or anything or no? How did you react to that?
Well, I think that, that for me was, it's all part of the, part of the travel experience. And my cousin did leave. She ended up going back to the United States, which was probably a smart thing. But I met up with some other friends of mine from college. And then, because we were experimenting together and did some things. And then I told them that I was thinking about going to Israel and going to Tel Aviv or go to Jerusalem and then staying there for a little bit. And my friends were like, nope, do not go near there. Don't go to a kibbutz. They're, they'll try to brainwash you. And, it was interesting and a different experience. Yeah. But I had a great time. And then
That's where you met the Dutch guy. So you weren't living in fear despite your experience. You just said, I better know some more, right? That's what.
I guess so. Yeah, it was pretty
I mean, that's amazing to me. Right, right.
Yeah.
Did you ever travel with your cousin again? No.
We didn't travel anymore after that.
Oh, my God.
But I've been, eternally grateful to her.
Yes.
For her.
Yes.
Her reaction was really spot on. So
wow. Anyway. For her. All right. So then you meet so are you still in love with the the Dutch after you go to all these countries? You're still in love?
Well, he and I, we, as I said, we went to Istanbul and Turkey, and then we went to when we were in India and went to different places in India, Delhi, New Delhi, and Varanasi, which is the holiest places for the Hindus. We had also been in Greece on the beach, which was very romantic. So yes, I was still in love with him. But, at that point, I'd been traveling for a while. And I also, one of the things we did, we went to India and we went to Nepal and we went trekking in the mountains. And again, in my 20s, I was so not prepared for this trip. And, I was climbing up trails and we had a Sherpa and thank God for him. Anyway, he was a good man. He protected us. But, but when I was in Nepal, I got sick. And so I was ready to, internal, stuff. And I had, as long story short, I got amoebiasis, amoeba in my liver. And I had to, go through treatment when I got home. And when I got off the train or the plane, my mother said, she didn't say, oh, it's so good to see you. She goes, you look yellow. Well, it's because I had amoeba in my liver. So, anyway,
how does that happen? How do you get amoebas in your liver?
From when we were in Nepal, and you make a mistake, you don't drink the water, and you don't eat from any utensils. It's all from your hands. So,
So, but they cured you. So you came back, and you had said before that you were walking the trails with your sandals and all that, and that was interesting.
That was really dumb, but
yeah,
it was an experiment. I was curious.
Hey, we all do dumb stuff. Yeah.
I went to Dharamsala, where the Dalai Lama, and Saw some beautiful places, you know, the holiest places.
Wow.
And I loved India, so.
Now, this is what's in my mind, and it might be none of my business, but how did you do it financially? Had you just saved up a lot of money so you weren't worried about it? Or were you at that age where you don't worry about money yet?
Well, I was at that age where you don't worry about money, but I also had money and set money aside. And I had, you know, ways of getting around. And my boyfriend didn't have as much money, you know, but so I supported him financially as well, which he was very grateful for because he did some not smart things like gambling with.
Oh, God, with your money. With
I
your
think
money? I've had that happen. With my money. What? What do you mean it's gone?
I flipped out. I said, I thought you were so trustworthy and reliable and, you know, such a man. And you diddlehead. I mean, there were some things he did that really made a difference, protected, you know, there was, and I know I don't want to get into too many like horror stories, but there was an experiment when we were taking a bus going towards Varanasi and then Calcutta. And if you're in India, you know, we had a flat tire. So they stopped the bus. We got off the bus and we were in a village where people didn't see many white people. And they didn't really understand why I was with a man and I wasn't married to him. So what they did was they crowded around us and then pushed me down because it was like dishonorable that I was with this person and we weren't married. So I don't even remember how I got out of that situation. It wasn't like he, you know, came to the rescue, but we did get back on the bus. And again, what I learned was that, you know, there's a different mindset as far as how men and women are related. And when they're, there's just, it goes without question. If you're traveling, you wear a ring and you're appropriately dressed. And I was not doing either one of those things. So that's what I learned. But again, it was just like, oh, here we are. This is traveling. And you meet interesting people while you're traveling and la, la, la. So.
Yeah. Wow. I wonder if that all prepared you for your career, you know? You knew what to learn. No, seriously.
Yeah.
And you were aware of, okay, that didn't work. Let's figure something else.
Yeah, right. Well, I learned, you know, as far as the culture of it's important to do the research or to check it out. And even then, there are things you're never going to know, you know, you're just never going to know. And then you got to just deal with it when it occurs, when it happens.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So those were your traumas, right? And now, so just, I don't know if you can go real quick. You're in your 20s, you get married, you have your kids, you're doing your consulting, right?
Yep.
Doing a lot of transformational work and business consult. Anything else from that, from up to the time when we're going to talk about next? That changed, you know?
Well, I was, you know, living in Minnesota, which I love. And I was doing the consulting work and also worked for a nonprofit called Cherish Our Children. And I partnered with the American Refugee Committee and went to Bosnia. But I don't want to go into the whole story about that. But it was an opportunity because I remember sitting, I don't want to sound too righteous or anything, but I remember sitting in the library being really like beside myself, like, wasn't Clinton going to do something about what was happening because of the genocide in Bosnia? It was horrific. And so when I went to Bosnia, it was with the board of directors of the American Refugee Committee. So they took me to places that normally we wouldn't go. Sarajevo, Mostar. And I saw people whose legs had been blown off because of the landmines, you know. Anyway, I don't know if you remember all that, but it was a fascinating, fascinating.
And what was your, what did you accomplish there? Did you accomplish something by going?
Went to the school because we had been raising money to contribute to a preschool and help them rebuild their schools in Sarajevo.
Oh. Wow.
So
what year was that? That must have been a while ago.
I don't know. It was
80s.
I went to the. Yeah, because I remember my boys were still young. And so it was in the end of 1990 something or other.
Okay. All right. So you're doing your consulting. Do you love your consulting? Oh, so you got married, right? How long were you married for?
26 years.
But it wasn't to the Dutchman.
No, it was to...
You didn't marry him.
I didn't marry the Dutchman because he wanted to join the Peace Corps in Africa. And I was like, I think I'm done. I'm not following you. I'm not going to go spend more time in Africa. So... So I did go through a couple, you know, I met this guy, got engaged and then broke off the engagement and then met somebody else who kind of fit the type that I was supposed to be with. Harvard graduate, you know,
wow,
handsome man, super smart, too smart for his own good. And he actually was he was a good husband and a fabulous father. So... We were married for, you know, as I said, for about 26 years. So.
Cool.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. I want to ask what happened. I don't know if it's, again, any of my business, but what?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, he was a little bit younger than me. And 2008, you know, when... the, you know what, hit the fan and he lost his job. And then, you know, he said he was insistent on moving from Minnesota to Princeton. And I was like, I don't want to. And we were, you know, my family, my father, my mother were living on the East Coast and there were a lot of reasons to move. But when he was looking for work, went to Kansas City, he was having affairs, he was cheating on me.
Oops.
And I'm pretty much of a, you know, stickler when it comes to that. You know, you can be a diddle brain with me, but you don't get to cheat. And that's where I really drew the line. So, and I think he was ready to, you know, do new things as well. So. I have no regrets whatsoever about my relationship with him.
But so you did move to Princeton, though?
We did move, yep.
You moved with him, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then, let's see, I'm watching the time. Okay. So let's talk about, you did all that work. I mean, I know what you did was amazing. I would want people to know about that, but I want them to hear about your surgery and how that changed your life, too. Because there you are doing work for 45 years, right?
Right. And then in, you know, the pandemic hit. Then I noticed that my eyes were bothering me. And I was like, wonder what this is about. And so I went to the eye doctor and used every frickin' machine that was in the eye doctor's office. And then they said, finally, I think you should get an MRI. And I said, okay. Well, I don't know why, but sure, we'll get an MRI. So I went and had my picture of my brain taken, and they discovered that there was a tumor in my brain, right over my optic nerve on the left side of my brain. And it was a big tumor. It was like the size of an apple. And they said, really, there is a brain tumor there. And I met with my surgeon, who I loved. And he said, you know, this kind of tumor, we don't know if it's malignant or not, but this kind of tumor has been around for a while. You may have had this tumor for 20 years. That's what they said. So we should operate sooner rather than later. So I said, okay. So, I told my family, that I was having brain surgery, and my children were gracious, supportive. My oldest son is my hero. And so I went in, and
How soon after did you go in?
like 2 weeks after, it was, so it was in March. And then I went to the hospital in Philadelphia, which is an old hospital. Who's ever been there? No one. And I didn't even
Which
know
one?
anybody. It's a
Which
big
one?
Penn
That's where I went to school.
Oh, that's right. You went to Wharton. So anyway,
So you were, yeah. So that you're kidding. That's a huge hospital, right? Okay.
it's a
My
huge
sister's been there
hospital.
many times.
And I loved my surgeon, who was just brilliant. Anyway, he spent 9 hours getting rid of the brain tumor. And then, I was supposed to get another MRI right after the surgery. And I was like, and I don't remember any of this. But I didn't want to. So for 2 days, they were trying to get me to go through that machine. And evidently I was resistant. Finally, I did, and it was like I was conscious again after the third day. And I had a nurse who was very loud and yelling at me, and I was like, do you anyway? So it took me a while to recover, but I recovered really quickly, and I have to
But it
say,
was gone. The tumor was gone. It wasn't malignant. It was
no,
fine.
they had some question because they're like different levels, and they thought there might be a little something or other. But then I went to a radiologist, and he, did some testing, and he goes, he's an older guy, he's probably about 78, 79, and my son and I sit down, and he looks at me, and he goes, nope, nope. It's like, you mean no, like, nope, there's no cancer, you're fine. And then he waited for another 30 minutes to go work on somebody else, and then came back, and he goes, okay, we'll see you later, you're fine. So that was the end of that. And I went to rehab and did therapy and all that good stuff. So, but I really, if it wasn't for my family, they
Why?
were, so supportive. My older son moved in and lived with me for a month and made sure I didn't, fall down the stairs where I live and that kind of thing. But it was really an amazing experience. And I loved, loved, loved the people who cared for me. Because I'm telling you, during the rehab, they wake you up. I don't need to go into the detail, but they wake you up at all different times of the night, give
What
you
kind of
stuff.
rehab? What
It's,
kind of rehab?
for your physical and for your brain, speech therapy. So they wanted to make sure I could still think. And I actually did pretty well with the brain,
That's
with the speech
amazing,
therapy.
right?
I
That's totally a
know.
miracle, that whole thing.
It
So
was
then
amazing.
when you, so after that, you made the decision to.
I decided I have a new life. I am ready to. I had this, I was like in another world. And I'm getting chills now thinking about it. All I can say is what I was present to was just being grateful. Grateful for being alive and grateful for how it really connected our family. My ex-husband was there and cried the whole time while I was going through surgery. And my older son was like, I'll take care of this, doctor. But anyway, the thing that was sort of a defining moment was I remember being in the rehab room, and there was a big picture window, and then you could see the Delaware. Anyway, I decided that I was going to create a new life. And it was at that point that I went back to my the place where I had been working for 26 years and said, I'm ready to retire. And, I was old enough to retire anyway, but I was so, there was no shame or anything around it. It was like, I am so done. I am ready to start over and create a new life. And I was really remarkably free. And people, once I did that, they were like, it took
Was
a
it
brain tumor for you to get with the program, to
because you were stressed? Like what was it that you were saying goodbye to besides the work? Like the stress or
it
the
was the stress and the dynamic of, I think to be just be authentic about it, I'd had this brain tumor for a while and my level of performance had declined over, several years. And I didn't feel any differently. I just wasn't performing and I didn't want to, is the truth.
Right, okay.
I was sort of done. I was
Yeah.
done. So,
But you were
anyway.
going through the motions, and that's not fun.
Exactly. You nailed it, Miss Hillary. You nailed it. Right. I was going through
I can
the
relate. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Wow. All right. Well, great. All right. Well, thank you for all of that. And I think we're ready for our halftime show. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about what you're doing now. So thank you, Annette Nathan.
Oh,
Woo!
thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Welcome back with Annette Nathan. I just want to quickly thank our sponsor, Kikori. That's my daughter's company. She works there, and that was her voice. I always have to tell people it's a great social emotional learning program. It's an app, but it's something that teachers can use at school. It's amazing, and it really helps our children connect, become more emotionally and socially, together because they missed a little of that during COVID. So it's very important. You can go to KikoriApp.com and connect with Haley. And then, as always, my books, Real Talk, You can go to realtalkwithhillary.com, get the book, take the quiz, and set up a call. Or if you really are into fixing yourself, get this book, Your Bullshit is Your Blessing, because you could start having fun with that. So here we go. Back to Annette. Tell us, you had your surgery, had your moment of clarity, and decided to go in another direction. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was thinking, first of all, Hillary, I just want to say publicly what a gift this has been, you know, just in preparing for this conversation. So I've been remembering things I haven't remembered in a really long time. And I'll just do, just share a quick story. When I was in the second grade, and there was a, you know, I went to a country school, Kingsbury School. And we were all, you know, kind of crowded together with these little old, you know, those old fashioned desks. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so there was a boy in my class. His name was Ricky Brooks. And I don't know what possessed me, but one afternoon I hushed everyone and said, I have an announcement to make. And I said, I want you to know I'm in love with Ricky Brooks. And the whole class, it erupted and went hysterical. People were laughing hysterically, throwing papers. You know, it was like a huge commotion. And I didn't think, you know, I'd have such a reaction. But Mrs. Snyder says, who said that? Who said that? And I said, I did, Mrs. Snyder. And she said, Annette, don't you know that the boy is supposed to tell the girl first that he loves her, and then the girl tells the boy, yes, and I love you too. And I was so humiliated, like I embarrassed myself. And I don't even remember what he did.
Yeah.
At that point. I was
gonna ask about him. Did he hide? Did he run away? Did he run home? And
he was a tough dude, man. I don't know. But boy, I got so much on the bus ride home. Anyway, I thought that's interesting, you know, because that's where people drew the line as far as what was what girls do and what boys do and what's appropriate. So to answer your question, as you know, throughout it shaped, it colored my point of view about the whole thing. What were you going to ask?
No, because when we were talking about you coming on the show and you said something about being appropriate, and I'm like, absolutely not. Please don't be. That's no fun. But so that might have been where you made that up, that you have to be appropriate.
Oh.
Second grade.
No kidding, because I got, you know, Mrs. Snyder let me have it. And I was embarrassed. I was really embarrassed, like doing it right and all that. But
well, were you open to, you know, expressing your love or whatever to men? Did that shut you down or no? Or did you stay open? No?
No, I was a little more reticent. I mean, I was a little more careful certainly not in my communication publicly, you know.
That's a
I
great
didn't run any more, you know, do any more announcements like that. That's for sure.
You know, second grade must be the time because I got in trouble. I had this guy ask me to marry him during class, and I was like, "What?" And the teacher was like, "Hillary, stay after class." And I was like, and I was like a good girl, you know, like I never did anything bad. So I was just like, "Well, that gets you in trouble." You know, boys get. Anyway, went over, you know, everyone else was out to recess and I had to stay in. And she said, what, you know, what were you doing? And I said, well, he wants me to marry him. And so she was like, oh. So she let me like pick out books or something. I wasn't in trouble anymore. You know, she kind of got it. It was like, that was like a defining moment, you know, in some way too.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's funny. So anyway, okay. So anyway, go ahead. What were you saying about that? Yeah.
You know, I grew up with three sisters and a very powerful mother. And so I had never really been daunted by, you know, being a woman, but it was in my conscience growing up, what gals can do and what they can't. I remember running for student council. I invented student council, and then I elected myself president. And then we had to have an official election, and John Diebel won. So, I mean, we let him be president. I was vice president. But here, to get to you back to your question, what I took on is after, leaving the other company is to create my own organization, for me, it's like a huge self-expression. Mm-hmm. And what my intention is to work with women business owners worldwide and empower them to be prosperous and lead. And so I'm starting off in the first couple of years, focusing on the United States and Canada. And then I'll move into other places where I know people are really excited about starting their own businesses.
I'm going to just show your, I can't share it. Okay. Anyway, I was going to show your website, but so what do you actually, I know you're empowering women. Are you empowering them to start businesses? Is that what, like, it's what are you question. Actually doing with them? Yeah.
So there are two pathways. One is to work with people who've just are starting up their business and are looking for direction on how to be effective. So, what I'll be doing is I have these webinars, the Prosperous Women webinar, and it's to introduce people to how to create a foundation so that you create a wealth generating system. Because a lot of us are good at selling our product, but we don't know how to run a business. So this is like how to invent a structure so you can be effective in delivering your products and services, but also, you know, be educated in the nuances of money and finance and how to run the business effectively.
And how do you know that from your consulting? Is that what you did?
Yeah.
So you helped people generate wealth before?
Yes, I've worked with and I've led education for women business owners. And then the other piece is to work with veteran business owners, because as I have let, and I don't have to tell people this, but we are in a totally new era. Not just as business owners, but we're in a new time and place in how to function and be, you know, with balancing your family, with your business, that kind of thing. So with veteran business owners, it's about how to blow life back into your enterprise and be at work on designing a future that you're really, really excited about and getting your staff lined up in the fulfillment of that new future. So it's a breakthrough future that wouldn't normally happen, and whatever you consider to be impossible. That's really my passion, is working with people who have given up or just say it's not possible. That's where I like to get to work with you. And, you know, out of our dialogue, start to look at different avenues and pathways and eliminate mindsets that block you or constrain you from being at risk.
Mm.
So there are a couple things that are, you know, that can characterize business owners or women. One is, I mean, there are all these statistics that you can examine, but we tend to be a little more reserved and take less risk in some, not all women, but some.
When you say risk, do you mean financial risk? Do you mean speaking up? Do you mean going public? Like any kind of risk?
Yeah, it just depends on what people are selling or promoting. Okay. Or some people are just passionate but are reticent about you know, how they're networking with their clientele. So it could be, you know, marketing is an issue. Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the things I've done, Hillary, is created what's called a network consulting. And it's a network, big old network. And the intention is to create a network that all women can be a part of. So it's like this grandiose sorority where people can learn from each other and steal from what's working and what's not working. And the intent is like once every 6 weeks, I'll have guest keynote speakers like you who will come on and share with people about how to write a book or, you know, how to be effective in keeping employees happy and around. Because what we're struggling with right now is you'll see the turnover rate is pretty high with employees, how to keep employees engaged and loyal if it's possible. I mean, my sons have explained to me why that's a ridiculous idea, but
being loyal?
No, they are very loyal, but they're saying we're in a different era and you don't always get where you may work your butt off, but you may not get compensated over time for your effort and your investment. And so that's, you know, so there are different subjects that we'll look at. And people may say, I'm interested in this. Can you discuss this? And I'll say, yeah, let me find somebody who's really key, great at this.
So what is the structure of this network consulting? Like, what does it look like? Let's say I want to be in it. What am I actually joining, or how does it work?
So you, can you get my business card for me? So what it is you join the network, and there's, I think it's a pretty hot website.
Okay.
And then there's a place where you can click and join the network. And then, you know, there's like a monthly fee.
Oh, it's called the network? That's
awesome. Isn't that great?
I didn't get it before. I was like, a network? Okay, whatever. Wow, the network. I love it.
I know.
Cool. Wish I could show your website, but I'm disabled here. Let me see.
Oh, see if you can do it. I mean, I could do a screenshot.
No, we'll see if you can. I'm disabled from it, but unless you can fix that, Doug. Anyway, okay, so go ahead. So the network. Oh, done. So, okay, let's try. Here we go.
Come on.
So here is.
There
so
you
here
go.
Is her website, networkconsulting.com. Okay, let me move these out of the way. Okay, so Network Consulting, empowering women entrepreneurs, join the network. Wow. The network is a global marketplace for women to network and accomplish what they think is impossible. That is so cool. So what would someone do if they came here? So it's a network consulting.com. Annette is A-N-N-E-T-T-E, work. Okay.
So at the top of the page, you can see you can either join the network and that's it. You don't have to do anything else.
Oh, here. Okay. And is there a cost?
And then it's $39 to join the network per month.
Okay.
But it's worth it because you're building your own avenue for networking and marketing. And people, you know, start knocking on your door. Then the other thing that I'm offering is, or you can hit client login, is join these web sessions on prosperity. And do a 6 or 8 session series on.
No,
you know,
I'm just cruising through the website. Okay.
I know.
TEDx talk. Is that you?
Yep.
Whoa.
Now there's some challenge though with the TEDx talk.
Mm-hmm. All right,
because
all right,
it was the first.
I'll come back. Let me come back to you. Cause I'm now, my brain is inside of your website. Okay. So anyway, it's a networkconsulting.com. Join the network. Okay, good. All right. I'm back to you. So go ahead.
Anyway, you like to- so you can, I mean, the various things you can do is depending on what your needs are as an organization. If you want to come up with a new future, then I'll work with you on a one-on-one basis and we'll do executive coaching. And then if you want your staff trained, then we can do training in the area of effective communication. And as you and I know, Hillary, the work I do is not teach people.
Right.
It's really for people to discover for themselves, like in real life, how does it work and what's the best approach to communicating effectively. And I'll give you some terms and some training in listening, being an effective listener, which not many of us are. You know, we think we are, but this is coaching and how to be effective. So I'll work with you in effective communication. I'll work with you in the area of selling so you can eliminate barriers to being effective and confident. And then the other program that I offer, which I think is, it's state of the art. It's a being a leader program. Mm. And it's being done now in universities throughout the United States and Canada. And it is phenomenal, that training. So again, it gives you a chance to reinvent your notions about what it is to be a leader. Like a lot of us are like, I'm not a leader. I'm better at following. Well, you find out you can be effective as a leader sitting in the back seat. Mm. And people will respond to you because you're not being forceful. You're being enrolling and exciting and inspiring. So that's another possibility, another opening. So
wow.
I don't want to overwhelm people with all the, but I've got a lot of opportunities.
No, it's great. So yeah, they get, let me just show it one more time because we just have a few more minutes. Here's her TED Talk. You can learn a lot about
the golden age for the new entrepreneur.
Yeah. And all right, I'm stuck here. So let's just go. So anyway, she's got coaching, the headlines, coaching, webinars, programs, contact, join the network and client login. Very easy to find. AnnetteWorkConsulting.com. And so thank you for that. So we just have a few more minutes. What would you like to leave people with? Or what would be your vision for the next 5 or 10 years? If you could make like some kind of impact, like what would be your dreams?
Ay, ay, ay. I'm getting emotional. I'm just like, oh, I don't know why. But really, the intent is to build at least a 500-person or, you know, 1,000-person network for people who are business owners worldwide. Mm. And the other thing is to host guest speakers to come and educate people in the dynamic of how to have a just rip-roaring, thriving business. And then my intention really is, and this is something I got, I'm going to get beklempt again. When I was in India, you know, I just fell in love with the people there. And I decided at that time I was going to come back and I was going to make a difference with the impacting the poverty in that part of the world. And I've been to many places like Nigeria where people were living on a lifeboat, you know, and I don't want to get into the whole thing. But I think that women are so responsible and they tend to collaborate with one another that by supporting them in generating their business, then they can contribute their prosperity to their communities, to their families, to the world where they live, and support others in being entrepreneurial and businesslike and profitable. And that is available, believe you me. Doesn't matter, you know, you may not own land, but if you own a cell phone, you can make things happen. So wow. I think that's my vision.
Thank you. Wow. Well, we're out of time. You know, it reminds me of the Lynn Twist book and what she was doing in The Soul of Money.
The Soul of Money. And she was it's a fabulous, fabulous book. I highly recommend it.
And what she did with the women, that's what you wanted. It's very cool. Very cool. So thank you, Annette Nathan, for who you are, for the work you're doing, for transforming yourself over and over and over again, and just, you know, never giving up, and just, you know, being someone that we all want to be. So thank you.
Thank you for this. This is awesome. Thanks. I really appreciate it, Hillary.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to GettingRealWithHillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.